Welcome back to the show. It's Niamh here on Ross FM and 94.6. And joining me now on the line is Dr. Andrew Newby. And he is going to be in the Strokestown Park House on the 26th of January, launching a new exhibition which looks into the famine in Finland. Yes, I suppose some of us will always be aware of, our history, and in the history books at school we all learned about the Irish famine. But you might not be aware of the famine that happened in Finland as well. So first off, Andrew, could you tell our listeners a bit more about the famine that happened in Finland?
Yeah, so the famine in Finland, it really culminated in 1868, so it's 150 years ago this year, and depending on how you count it, over 10% of the population dies. But it's not something that just happened immediately. It had been building up, and circumstances
around famine had been building up for a few years. But what they tend to think of as the cause of the Great Famine in Finland is not a blight like we had, but a frost. Okay. So there was a terrible frost in the September of 67, and that created the harvest failure. The means of getting around the country were totally cut off. The means of getting emergency food into the country were cut off because the Baltic Sea had frozen over. So Finland was very much isolated at that time. So frost was really the main cause or the main trigger, rather than a potato or, you know, a crop failure like we had.
Okay. I was asking around a couple of people that, like, I know myself, I have people who are studying history even here in Ireland, and they didn't even hear about it. Now, I don't know whether that's just in terms of electives, and I know different courses have different opportunities, but it isn't as well known. I suppose we are so used to ourselves, you know, at school we learn all about the Great Irish Famine, and I suppose it's interesting enough to know that a famine happened in another country, and yet there hasn't been any link to it as of yet, and we haven't been as aware of it, I suppose.
I think that's right. It's also partly because it's not so well known in Finland either. So also the Finnish language is not a language that a lot of people would be familiar with, so people obviously haven't read the little bits of information that there is about it. I first went to Finland in 1998, and I heard about the Great Famine there and immediately seized upon that from an Irish point of view. But then I didn't really meet many people who were particularly well versed about what had happened. The renowned Irish scholar Cormac O'Groda, who's written a lot of work on the Great Famine, has mentioned the Finnish famine quite a bit in his own work, and that gave me a little bit of an anchor for my own research. So I was able to, you know, build upon what Cormac had mentioned. Okay. And as I developed more knowledge about the Great Famine in Finland, it just presented loads of really interesting comparisons and contrasts with Ireland. But one of the key ones is very much that, like you say, it's not so well remembered in Finland. And why is that?
Okay. And I suppose this is what is culminating in the exhibition that's happening here in Strokestown at the National Family Museum on January the 26th, where yourself, you'll be launching the exhibition, and it's called Nälkä.
Yeah. So Nälkä is the Finnish word for hunger. So it'd be like the word that they would use themselves. One thing that I was having to bear in mind is that not everybody who comes to the Strokestown Museum is even very well aware of what happened in Ireland. So I couldn't just presume that everybody coming there would be able to understand the comparisons or contrasts that I've been trying to present. So, for example, Finland had what we would have called a Home Rule Parliament. Finland was looking after its own affairs. It was part of the Russian Empire, like we were part of the British Empire, but they weren't controlled from St. Petersburg. So that's one big reason why the Finnish famine has not been remembered in the same way that we have remembered it. It's not been used in politics, for example, in the same way that we had used it in our national story.
Okay.
But trying to present the story has been quite interesting, an interesting challenge, because I wanted to put some of these comparisons with Ireland in, but on the other hand, you also have to tell the basic story of what happened in Finland.
Okay. And so what can people expect then on the Friday, 26th of January in the Strokestown Museum?
Well, I'm going to give a short lecture, about 25 minutes, half an hour, about the comparisons and contrasts with Ireland, a little bit what I, a sort of personal reflection on how I found things in Finland and some of the things I've noticed. So I don't want to give too much detail about that.
Of course,
what I'll also do then is give a guided tour of the famine exhibition, the Finnish famine exhibition, and then people can ask me questions, you know, if anything particular emerges that they're interested in from the different panels or from the different exhibits, they can just ask me there and then. So one question that keeps coming up, we put the exhibition in place back in the autumn. And from what I've heard, people are asking, you know, was Russia to blame in the same way that the Irish nationalists blamed the British for the Great Famine in Ireland, for example? And this seems to be a question that comes up time and time again. The question of blame, and that's something that's very much from an Irish perspective, I think, that the questions come up. So I think there'll be a lot of interest there. I think there'll be a lot of, it's interesting for people to realize that there were famines in other countries as well, but also that people didn't necessarily react in the same way that we did. I'm sure there'll be a lot of interesting questions. It should be a really nice event. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I suppose just in terms of putting on an exhibition like that, what kind of work goes into it, Andrew, to kind of organise it and have the right, I suppose, material there for it as well?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting challenge because I'm used to coming from a museum background. I'm more from an academic history background, so I'd be writing books and articles and so on. So the way I'd been thinking about it is, in a way, this is a bit like a 3D version of a book. So you have images and you have exhibits and you have to, of course, create a narrative that makes sense, but also put images together that go with the exhibits and so on. So I did stay up nights worrying about whether a particular picture should go onto a particular panel or something like that. There's images that we use from the National Museum and from the National Gallery in Finland. I also had a lady in the countryside in Finland make the bread from bark, from pine bark, which was one of the emergency foods. So we have that on display as well. Okay. So it's a question of really not trying to second guess what the audience would like, but what did I think would be the most interesting objects for the visitors to see. So we have farm implements from the 19th century and so on. I also worked with a really great graphic designer in Newry, County Down, who helped with the actual graphic design and so on. So I didn't do that myself, but I provided the material and the texts.
Okay. And just from a personal perspective then, Andrew, I suppose, what got you interested in this line of work?
I got a history at university, really. I went to university studying languages, so that's partly why I like doing history in other countries and using... I had an interest in languages, but I wasn't particularly interested in literature and so on. Mm. So when I gradually ended up doing a degree in history, I like to use my linguistic knowledge to look at the histories of other countries and compare them. So I originally was looking at Scotland and Ireland. I did work on the land war for my PhD. We have connections in our family to Michael Davitt, so I was always I was always very interested in Michael Davitt. But I was at university in Scotland, so I was kind of comparing those two. And then when I moved to Scandinavia, I've done work, for example, between Norway and Scotland and between Finland and Ireland, and I'm living in Denmark now. So it's also having a curious mind and just thinking about whenever you learn about the history of a new society, I think it's almost automatic that you make those connections to your own history or to your own knowledge. So that's something that I'm very interested in myself. And it's something I'm enthusiastic about. And I think then if you're enthusiastic as a historian, it tends to rub off on your students or hopefully on the public.
Yeah, exactly. Because I suppose this time of year, you know, a lot of kids now are back to school and the Leaving Cert is coming up and there's mocks. And I suppose people are kind of thinking about what to do. And I know history maybe isn't something that's always at the forefront. And that's why I just thought it was very interesting to interview yourself, Andrew, just to get a perspective that, you know, it's not just our Irish history. It's history that we can link maybe to other kind of countries. And as you said, the languages is what kind of brought you to maybe other countries as well and consider outside the box, I suppose, in terms of your normal kind of... You know, because I know history is kind of a hard subject. I know myself from school, it wasn't my best subject. But there was different areas of it now that I would be interested in from an art point of view was the Renaissance. So, do you know, there's just other avenues there, I suppose, that people can kind of take from it. And I think that'll be a very interesting exhibition to go to on the Friday, January the 26th, just to even have a chat with yourself as well, if people have an interest in history.
Yeah, I'd be very happy to. I think that people, I mean, if there are school children or students coming along, I think history is really important nowadays. I think it can give you a really good grounding in interpreting what you're being told in the news. We hear a lot about the different interpretations of the news in politics these days. And I think people are getting more and more information than ever. But if you have a good grounding analytically in history, I think that's a really important basis for the rest of your life. It doesn't matter if you know about the land war or about the famine or about the Russian Revolution specifically. That's the sort of thing that makes you good in pub quizzes or you know, a good dinner guest or something like that. But the actual, the basic skills of interpreting data or sources, putting narratives together, this is all really relevant, I think. So.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So I suppose we'll finish it there. But I just, and finally, if people want any more information, is there any other further research they can do on it, Andrew?
There's a couple of articles that I've written that might not be that widely available. But if anybody wants to either email me or they can look me up at Andrew Newby. I'm at the University of Aarhus in Denmark, which is A-A-R-H-U-S. So people can find me very easily. They should be able to find links to some of the videos that I made last summer about the Great Famine. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it.
That's perfect. And sure, look, they can meet you as well in person on Giant 326
at 3 p.m. I'm always happy to hear from people as well.
Yeah. That's perfect. Thanks a million, Andrew, for joining me today.
Thanks, Niamh.
So that's Dr. Andrew Newby there, and you can check out NALCA, the Great Finnish Famine, which is on in the National Famine Museum in Strokestown Parkhouse in County Roscommon there on the 26th of January. And Andrew will be launching that at 3 p.m. and admission is free.